Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
I'm so good.
So good. So good. Good. I'm glad you are. Welcome. Welcome to another Saturday, Woods and Water, South Carolina. Glad you're here. We had to do a little scrambling this week. Had a couple of guests scheduled. I really don't like to get more than a week out. If we're going off somewhere, I'll record. But I like to. And since by the way, what? The studio's back open at the station. Yes,
you didn't tell me
that. I didn't tell you that. So we're gonna have to get in there and do a real live one. Those were so much. Those are fun. We've missed that for the past year.
I can't believe you didn't tell me that.
I saw it. Paul Lindsay posted something about being back in the studio, and I texted him and said, "Hey, you're back in the studio." He goes, "Yep, it's open." So we will get back. We'll get back in. We need to come up with some kind of big giveaways or something, fishing tackle or something. We'll find some stuff and do one. So we'll keep you posted on that. But I really don't like to get more than a week out because things change. You know, I don't want to have a stale show because it's old news. But this week, had to reschedule our guest today. Yeah, which didn't leave us much time to get in here. And I didn't have anybody waiting in the wings this time around, which is my fault. But anyway, so Taylor and I are going to run it. We got some very timely and stuff going on, so it's going to be an interesting show. Anyway, glad you could share part of your Saturday with us, waste part of your Saturday with us. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's all fun, or at least we try to have some fun doing it, and we appreciate those that listen.
We need to start doing Facebook Lives if we're going back in the studio.
Yes, if we're going to be back in the studio, but also if we're going to be here at Studio B, we need to figure out how to get the Facebook feed. And I think Trey can do that. I talked to someone else who I think can get that done. So,
and they can see me back blonde again.
That's right, folks. In case you haven't been keeping up with things around our house, sometime last year, Taylor decided she wanted to be a brunette. And she turned out to be
bad.
A redhead.
It went from black to brown, to red, back to brown, and then to red.
I don't know. But anyway, it's costing me a lot of money to get it back to blonde, but to natural. And if you ever pick up another bottle of hair color while you are living in this house, it's going to be ugly.
I won't pick it up. My hairdresser will pick it up.
No, it won't.
You said I can't. No, I won't.
This is the last time. Until you get out on your own, you cannot color your hair anymore. Cost me an arm and a leg to get you back blonde again. Yes, she is. She's back to Taylor. In fact, somebody said, I recognize her now. So anyway. Best April Fool's joke ever.
Oh, my word.
This week. Ever.
Scared me to death.
So I wake up Thursday morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning, can't go back to sleep. And so I do what I normally do. I roll over, flip my phone on, and I start going through emails. Mm-hmm. And I have an email from Major League Fishing, Joe Pogger, who's my good friend I met at FLW. And I mean, we had lunch last week in Texas. When I was in Texas, we went to lunch together at another barbecue joint. It was really good. They had really good ribs.
That's good.
And corn casserole was good. Joe didn't like the corn casserole, but I do.
Are you trying to make me hungry?
No, I'm not. But anyway, news release. I mean, this is MLF, you know, logo, media contact, Joe Pogger, director of communications, Major League Fishing prohibits Berkley Power Bait Max Scent and Bass Pro Tour competition. And it's got pictures here. Max Scent banned. Citing unfair competitive advantage, league announces a new rule to even the playing field. And it goes through, it's rule number 7 regarding tackle and equipment. Says MLF has studied the use of the Berkley Power Bait Max Scent. And I'm reading this at 5 o'clock Thursday morning now, folks. Since its launch in 2018, and we've made the decision to no longer permit its use in the Bass Pro Tour. The ban applies only to Berkley Power Bait Max Scent baits. At this time, original Berkley Power Bait and Berkley Gulp baits are not included in this restriction. And it goes on, I'm like, holy smoke, this is not going to be good. My first thought was Anthony Gagliardi, who loves the Max Scent stuff. I'm like, oh, this is not going to go over well. And it goes on to quote Boyd Duckett, "We're proud to be angler-driven league and to continue to support our anglers and their livelihood with this decision." And I'm like, oh, my God. He cites the Alabama rig was banned in 2013 for similar reasons. And so I'm sitting there going, no, at first I was like, nah. And the more I read this, and it goes through and lists every maxent that's not allowed anymore. The maxent creature hog, the maxent critter hog, the maxent deworm, the flathouse, flat-nosed jerk shad, flat-nosed minnow, hitworm, magnum, kingtail lizard, lunchworm, meaty chunk, power chunk, and the general, all the maxent. And I mean, I'm like, holy smoke, this is not good. And what idiot at MLF thought this up? This is what I was thinking Thursday morning. Well, so it did cross my mind this was April Fool's Day, but this came out on Wednesday night. And so Joe lives in Minnesota, which is an hour behind. And so I'm like, I got to email, I got to text him, I got to call him, I got to do something, I got to find out what in the world is going on. And I was going to call Anthony. I'm like, I don't want to call him. He's going to be in a bad mood. I don't know who else to call. And so at 9 o'clock on the dot, 8 o'clock in Minneapolis, I texted Joe. I said, all right, dude. I said, complete confidentiality and all, what is going on? And he goes, well, you need to, there's a link there that you need to go for further clarification. You need to get visit Major League Fishing. And I was like, oh, I didn't see that. I just passed over that in my, you know, wonderment at this whole thing. And when you do that, it comes up this big April Fool's. I mean, it was a hoot. I understand, I haven't watched the video yet, but I understand there's a video of a bunch of the MLF guys on a conference call when they're explaining this rule change and all, and they're just incredulous, like, what are y'all thinking? And I don't agree with this at all. And then they tell them, and I understand it's pretty funny. I need to watch it.
You told me at lunch Thursday, you showed me the email, and I'm thinking, okay, the first thing that comes to my mind is, okay, well, they're taking it out because it's, you know, it could be considered cheating or something like that. And you look on that daggum link.
Yes.
Like, oh,
April
my
Fool's. So I'm sorry. I've been pranked a lot on April Fool's Day, and I consider myself a veteran. I don't usually fall for things. But, I bought this one hook, line, and sinker.
You also bought mine a few years ago when you had your flats boat parked up on the top of the driveway. I came running into the bedroom, and I said, Daddy, the boat is rolling down the driveway. You flipped. That was the best.
That wasn't April Fool's. Oh, that was just mean.
That was April Fool's.
Yeah, but that was just mean.
I knew it would get you.
Yeah. But, anyway, so, yeah. I have to tip my hat to Major League Fishing, Joe Parker. He said they've been working on it a couple of weeks, and the fact that they could keep it secret that long, man, I tell you, that was good. So, April Fool's, yeah, I got hoodwinked this year. So, anyway, gosh, we got a lot to cover. I don't know that we're going to get through a lot of this stuff, Taylor. It's just there's a controversy that's brewing. That I know what time it is.
I'm just letting you know.
Well, I know. I've been doing this a long time. I know what time it is. I know when to push the buttons.
Still forget some of the music.
Yeah, once in a while, but anyway, we're going to get there. There's a controversy we're going to start talking about in the next segment. Man, it's tough. Mm-hmm. I can see both sides. I can see a little bit of, you know, the old nose up in the air type thing going on with some of the public land bunch. It'll be interesting the fallout from this one. We do have some calendar events items. We do have some just general stuff. So, I don't know. We'll see how much we get through with this. But it's always good to have, when we used to do live all the time, Angela always told me, always come with more information you ever think you're going to get into, because you never know what's going to happen. Anyway, all right, y'all hang on. We'll be back after the break with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Did I catch you a little off guard there, Taylor?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, good. Keep you on your toes. I want you going to sleep beside me. Yeah, welcome back. This is going to get deep real fast. Bear with us. Hang in there. Listen and think. What we're going to talk about for the next little while, you need to keep an open mind about. Listen to both sides. I don't agree with a lot of what we're going to talk about, but I'm going to keep my opinion to myself, except to, you know, make a side note here and there. And I don't often get political, but I want to, you know, we've had a couple of instances of gun violence. And it's like I heard on the radio one morning this week. It's not a gun problem, folks. It's a people problem. It's a heart problem. It's a mind problem. It's much deeper than just an inanimate object. Mm-hmm. Because, if somebody wants to do you harm, I read somewhere that more people are killed with baseball bats in the U.S. every year than with guns. You know, they're going to use whatever's at the hand. Cars, we've all seen cars, buses, you know, tanks. Mm-hmm. Somebody stole a tank and, you know, explosives, knives. I mean, it's a people problem. It is not a gun problem. I often get this thing there. They're over, and this is from the NICS, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, that the FBI launched in November of 1998. There have been 380.45 million U.S. NICS firearm background checks initiated since the start date, including 39,695,315 in 2020, which is an annual record. And the month of February included 3,442,777 NICS checks. There are over 380 million guns in the United States. Now, that does not mean that every individual in the United States owns a gun. It just means that there are over 380 million guns in the United States. There are estimates of somewhere over like 4 or 5 trillion rounds of ammunition held in private hands. If guns were a problem, you'd know about it. Yes, people using guns are the problem. I printed this off. I mean, in the news media, it's narrative driven. We all know it. There's a narrative. We all have narratives to a certain extent. It's just whether you're willing to, you know, disregard some things and hype other things to make your narrative, you know, more attention grabbing or something like that. And look, any loss of life to me is such a waste, and it's so, I mean, we get callous to it, I think, at some points. But any loss of life is just, it shouldn't be. Especially to violence like that. But, you know, okay, so we had some massage parlor people get killed in, I forget where, and then you had the shooting at the shopping mall or the grocery store in Orange County. On Monday, March 15th, the headlines in the ABC 7, which is Chicago News, Chicago shootings, 38 shot, 4 fatally in weekend violence across the city. That's just the city of Chicago. You can pull that for Baltimore. You can pull it for, I mean, it's that way every weekend. And I say that because, yes, we have a problem of gun violence, but it's not the guns. It's people. And until we figure out how to help people who are like these shooters who have mental problems, you know, who are reclusive, who think people are watching them. You know, until you can help that problem, you will have violence because they have no hope or they're mad or whatever. But man, I tell you, it's tough to know where to stand on this stuff. But you know, this rush by politicians to use an instant like this to call for more gun control, to me, it's such a hollow call, because they care nothing about the everyday shootings in cities like this, and they don't want to enforce the rules on the criminals. They want to enforce rules, more rules on us, the law-abiding citizens who own guns. You know? Defund the police. How can we get more guns off the streets out of the hands of criminals when all these major cities want to defund the police, you know, and have fewer of them out there, handcuff them, take away their immunity for doing their jobs and stuff like that? So I just had to get that off. That's been riding me for a while now. And I can only take spurs digging into my side for so long before I got to say something. So, but that's just the way I feel. You know, look, if guns were a problem, if law-abiding people owning guns were the problem, you'd know about it, folks. We would have erupted a long time before now, but we are long-suffering, we are law-abiding people, and we aren't the problem. And the gun's not the problem either. Just because it looks different and it may look scary and it looks like what the military uses and stuff like that, it is not the same gun. It is not. Real simple fact. Semi-auto versus full auto means something. Whew. Okay.
Good job.
Some things just like this just tick me off. I'm sorry. Because it's just an irrational argument. The guns are the problem. An inanimate object. If that's the case, let's take cars away from people. Yeah. Cars don't kill people. People driving cars kill people. Mm-hmm. But we don't take their cars away from them. You know? I guess in some instances we do. But you give them time after time, drunk drivers, you know? Mm-hmm. And they get bail and get licenses and keep driving, you know? So, and there are all sorts of other instances. So, I hope you understand where that was coming from. Look, any loss of life is horrible for whatever reason. But life is full of death. It's been a common theme around our house over this whole year. And we haven't stopped going. We haven't stopped doing. Circumstances in some instances have limited what we can do. But we have lived. I mean, you can't be afraid of living because all of us are going to die one way or the other. We're going to die, whether it's the flu, COVID, slipping and falling in the shower, you know, Lord forbid, falling out of a tree stand. You know, it's something in life you're going to die of if it's from old age. You can't live your life in fear of it. And with that comes a lot of responsibility. So anyway, that's where that's coming from. Sorry about that. Taylor, I tell you what, let's do the calendar events.
Okay, we're going to run out of time to do our
special thing. But anyway, we'll get to as much as we can.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. Okay. I have to pull up my computer for this. Why don't you go ahead and do one?
Well, oh, I got to pull up my phone.
Okay. All right. So the 28th. Well, let's start. I got to get in order here. Okay. Brett Collins posted this. The Carolinas Bass Challenge, April 10th, is the Foothills Marine CBC qualifier on Lake Hartwell, Green Pond Landing. $8,000 first place, but usually pay $10,000 the first. And there's a CarolinaBassChallenge.com. You know, your Lake Hartwell is off limits the 5th through the 9th. And you could go to Lake Hartwell, go to CarolinasBassChallenge.com, check it out. Could be a tournament for you.
Okay. The Fellowship of Christian Athletes is putting on their first annual Harry Simpson Memorial Bass Fishing Tournament. That's April 17th. It's a Saturday. Launch at Safe Light and then first return at 3 o'clock at Jura Island on Lake Murray. It's $100 per boat and for two anglers. So to register, go to Northern Midland SCA.org.
What was that one more time?
Northern Midland SCFA.org.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
For those of you who like kayaks, the Yak Bassin A-Salt Series, they're having their first tournament April 18th, Charleston, Georgetown County boundary. Hit up Yak Bassin, YAK-Bassin, that's an apostrophe. And they've got April 18th, May 22nd out of Beaufort, June 19th, September 12th in Merle's Inlet, and a championship out of Charleston in October. So it could be something for you kayak guys.
DNR is putting on a saltwater family fishing clinic April 19th from 10 to 1, and that's a Monday. It's going to be in Georgetown. It's free. You have to wear a mask, sadly. But they're asking you bug spray, sunglasses, water bottle. Clinics are going to be held rain or shine unless hazardous weathers occur. So you can go to the Facebook page to find more information on that.
If you like convicts, a lot of people went, huh? Sheepshead fishing.
I love Sheepshead.
The 28th annual Big Ed Sheepshead Tournament. We call them convicts because of the black and white stripes. Sponsored by the Charleston Inshore Anglers, is going to happen Saturday, April the 17th from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. $40 per angler, includes a tournament t-shirt. Active duty military get a $10 off coupon. First place Sheepshead, $1,000. Second place, $500. And they pay all the way through 10th place, $50. Based on 140 anglers. Bonus prize, $50 for the largest dogfish, which is, I guess, our old trash fish tournament with the put up or shut up we used to have. They've secured the American Legion post at 968 Folly Road for a lot of their registration and all. So get a hold of them. They got to just Google the 28th annual Big Ed Sheepshead Tournament. Charleston Inshore Anglers is probably the best place to go. All right.
Take What Make One's putting on a women's turkey clinic. It's April 23rd in Edgefield at 1:30. Registration starts at 1 p.m. You have to wear a mask. For more information, you can look at DNR's Facebook page.
Very good. Quick update on my fantasy fishing.
Oh,
I did
my
really
word.
Good
You're
in the first
gonna
one.
You're literally
going
to take the last at 30 St. seconds John's of this.
Oh, man. I had 1,327 points. That's like 98th percentile. Then I fell to like, I don't know, I was 99.8. And now I'm sitting at 88% because I tanked at Pickwick.
We don't care.
I do. All right. Anyway, y'all hang on. We do have some good stuff coming up here. We'll see you after the break. Any guesses who that is?
No, it'll wake you up.
Well, that's good.
Gracious me.
That's what bumper music is for.
It's the bumper.
See? You don't know who to wake you up. Welcome back. We do have some stuff here to talk about. Meat eater. Whether you love him or hate him, he's done a lot for hunting. I mean, Steve Rinella is just a class guy. I've talked to him several times, met him several times. He's been on the show several times. He's supposed to come back on when he comes up for air to talk about the books he's written. He had a new book out at the first of the year, but with the holidays and all, he just didn't have time to work it in. So he'll get on here, but he's written some good books. My first inkling is brother Matt and Steve didn't see eye to eye. There's a video out that I was watching that was a promo for something, and Matt was on there, and he said, you know, if I die and for some reason know what's going on 20 years after I die and hunting is gone because the next generation decided they didn't want to hunt, well, then that's fine with me. And my mouth actually hit the floor. I couldn't believe I was reading. But Matt, he comes at it with a different slant than Steve. And he came out with an article March 21st called The Case Against Hunter Recruitment. R3, recruitment, retention, reactivation is a thing in the outdoors. Case has been made that hunter numbers are dwindling for whatever reason. With that goes the funding for a lot of wildlife restoration and studies, and because of Pittman Robertson money we get from license sales and excise taxes and so on and so forth. So Steve wrote a little intro to this and said, you know, my brother Matt, he's a research ecologist, and some of the differences that they have on this. So he let Matt publish this article, and it's raised some hackles across the hunting industry, rightly so probably. So I'm going to do Matt's part. Taylor, you've got a rebuttal that was written by a lot some of the editors from Outdoor Life, which has some interesting points. And we hope you'll enjoy this. This is going to make you think a little bit. And I don't know that we'll get to Steve's rebuttal, because Steve wrote a rebuttal, or kind of an explanatory piece after this was all said and done. So here we go. This is Matt Ranella, Steve's brother, from March 21st, The Case Against Hunter Recruitment. Have you ever arrived at your favorite whitetail hunting spot hoping to see another hunter there ahead of you? I'm guessing the answer is no. If I'm right about that, I invite you to take a look at a widespread and well-funded movement that's become known as R3. Stands for Recruit, Retain, and Reactivate, meaning the movement seeks to recruit new hunters, retain hunters that are already at it, and get those who have quit hunting back in the woods. I went to an R3 seminar in Lincoln, Nebraska. 3 days. Good stuff. He goes on, I'm an outdoorsman who craves solitude, yet my hunting spots get more crowded every year. That, in a nutshell, is why I'm leery of R3. He said, of course, the outright goal of R3 isn't to make the woods more crowded and lessen the odds of you drawing a tag, though that's an obvious result. Instead, the movement is motivated by the belief that hunter numbers are declining. And this is where it gets into a lot of, he's got some graphs here. It's on the Mediator website, mediator.com. You can read it for yourself. He goes on to say, you know, that this movement has been in existence for, you know, more than 10 years or so, but it really came to light in 2013 with the publication of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Hunter Participation Survey. It's interpreted as proof that hunter numbers are down, but Matt says it does not demonstrate declines. This is only done every 5 years, and there's some dips and humps in there. He says, you know, that are not irrefutable proof of hunting's demise. So he goes through some of the graphs in here, and like I said, if you want more of this, I welcome you to go find more on it. Hunter participation data. Yeah, he said there's actually an increasing trend from 2013 to 2019, suggesting we are recouping those lost hunters, but he said, I hope we don't. How many of us honestly regard the early 80s as the good old days? Well, I'm telling you, here in the South, 80s were pretty dadgum good. Reintroduction of whitetail deer, you know. But he grew up in Michigan. He said hunting pressure was ridiculous. So I think some of this comes from your experience, which experience shapes your views on a lot of this stuff. He said, I never saw a buck sporting a second set of antlers, and even spikes and forks were nearly extinct after opening day. And, you know, hey, Michigan's got a week-long season, so it could be very well right there. You know, he talks about the Michigan tag holders dropped from an average of 965,000 in the 80s to 755,000 in the 2010s. And he is right. I suspect this is because there are fewer places to hunt. That is true. We lose a lot of habitat every year. He said, I believe hunters are just like any other predator. When home range availability and or prey numbers decline, so do we. In this sense, R3 goes against basic population ecology by trying to increase predator numbers above what the resource can handle. Then he goes on to talk about North Carolina, which is one of 17 states, he says, where hunter numbers increased between the 80s and 2010s. Due to conservation, the whitetail deer population dramatically increased in North Carolina. And he said that's got to be the reason for the increased people, and that could be true, too. Another graph about millions of dollars spent, tag revenue, inflation adjusted by year all the way from 1980 to 2019. And his argument is that $100 may not be drying up. I think there you've got to take into account things cost more.
Right.
Everything costs more in 2019 than in 1980. Dollars don't go as far. For example, hunting has been increased. Several factors could easily override effects of attrition. For example, hunting has become increasingly trendy in recent years. Duck hunting. Mm-hmm. Seen that. And that is likely adding to our ranks, though perhaps for the wrong reasons. Also, the free-range organic locavore folks continue to grab onto hunting. That's the ones who want their organic meat and all, which hunters have always treasured. These are just Johnny-come-latelys or new hunters, mostly new hunters. Additionally, COVID-19 is causing huge increases in hunter safety enrollment and hunting license sales. We've seen that on the fishing side, too. At least some of these new hunters will keep at it, basically until we start hearing about landowners who have gobs of turkey and deer on their property but can't find anyone willing to come hunt for them. Let's stop fretting about attrition. Well, I can tell you in South Carolina there are farmers who wish people would shoot more deer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Could all this R3 be used to a better place? Part of R3's appeal is that it makes hunters feel warm and fuzzy, benevolent folks guiding newbies to a more fulfilling life. But I don't think we should feel so good about R3 just for its own sake. First, there is a zero empirical evidence that simply turning someone into a hunter makes them a better, happier person. If the rationale for R3 is making people better and happier, redirect the effort toward encouraging good nutrition, reading, and cardiovascular exercise, things proven to make people feel better. I would argue that time spent outdoors hunting makes you feel better.
Mm-hmm. It helps mental state.
Every study out there says more time spent outdoors helps you mentally.
Yep.
So, yes, you could redirect it that direction. I choose in my life to redirect people to outdoor activities such as hunting, hiking, fishing.
Right.
He says, rather than seeing R3 as philanthropic, I see it as undemocratic and rude. No pro R3 group has ever asked if you want to encounter more hunters when afield, despite that being the blatantly obvious consequence of R3. Instead, they assume either you're okay with increased hunting pressure or worse, they don't care what you think. And he goes on to say, I quit a board because they didn't want to answer that question, on and on and on. It's bewildering that consequences for hunting pressure are absent from the R3 discussion. And he goes on to talk about that. He says, by increasing hunting pressure, R3 seems doomed to fight against itself. And that could result in a bunch of lifelong hunters getting displaced by half-committed people.
But I disagree with that because, at least for me, I love to see new people out there. And we don't hunt public fields that much. But when I do, I love to see people outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it feels good because, you know, you're getting more people out there.
Final paragraph in this whole thing. Conservation nonprofits are essential to the future of hunting, and we owe them much for the important work they do. If you're not a member of a group like BHA, TRCP, or Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, let friends and family recruit the next generation of hunters. That model has worked since the beginning of time. Okay. And that took a segment, Taylor. So you're going to have a segment to talk about what the editors of Outdoor Life talked about.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of them. So you're going to have to watch time very carefully. But that's, Matt, and you notice in there the ecology side of it, you know, the caring capacity side of it and some of that. So Steve does come in his last thing and say, you know, I don't always agree with my brother, and we hammer it out once in a while. But, you know, so anyway, well, we got 30 seconds to the end of it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, we don't? Okay. We'll see you after the break then. Okay, so we're back for the last segment of Woods and Water, and Sophie has woken up. There's nothing more disturbing than having your lab snoring in the background, and you tend to do that every show, Sophie.
Yeah, you do.
So go lay down.
It's about that time. It's a Saturday. She's chilling.
Go. She wrinkles her ears up like I've just crushed her emotions. Anyway. Okay, so we had the case against hunter recruitment by Matt Ranella. Taylor has the rebuttal.
Yep.
And it's got some good points. I agree with it, a lot of it. I can see some of what Matt has to say. So it's, like I said, you may not agree with it, but at least think it through.
All right. We have a couple authors from the Outdoor Life that decided they were going to pitch in and comment on this.
Like the next day.
Yeah. Just a little background. They all grew up hunting and fishing. 140 hours of experience between the four of them. They're all from the West, Midwest, and Northeast.
Years, not hours.
Years. I'm sorry. Did I say hours?
You said hours.
Oh, I need sleep.
It's quite all right.
years. They've hunted on private lands, public lands, wildlife management areas. They've done it all. So, hear me out on this. So, the first author is Andrew McKean. He is the hunting and conservation editor. So, he talks a little bit about... I don't even know where to start with this.
You better hurry up. We've only got 11 minutes left.
He observed that last fall, there was an unsettling tang of competition and a product of more people chasing the same game. He notes a couple of things he saw last season. More people were out because of COVID, and I think we all saw that. And due to that, there was people piled on top of each other. But committed hunters will always find an opportunity. He talked to three different non-residents who said that the hunting was so bad in their states, that's why they moved. And he said, think about it. If you have better hunting than your neighbors, then you can expect your neighbors to show up. And that makes sense. Most of the hunters he encountered were not brand new hunters. They were decked out in thousands of dollars of gear, high-end electronics and optics, not newbies. These were experienced. What didn't occur to him was that there are simply too many hunters in America, and things would be way better if it was just me and my buddies. Three factors he wants to discuss in this. The first is Rinella's reliance on the outdated and inaccurate measures of hunting participation. At the time last week, national hunter participation numbers came out and they were a mess. And so for us, we're left with anecdotes. Him and Matt Rinella, he says in here, shared similar experiences. They live in similar places and out in Montana, eastern Montana, and they saw so many non-resident hunters. Matt's special places, like his, are on hard-to-access pieces of public land.
I think that's where some of this comes from. We have in certain movements in the United States, we have elevated public land hunting above private land hunting.
Right.
The experience should be the same. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, look, a deer on public land is a deer on private land.
Right.
They're just as skittish, trust me. You know, they have interaction, especially if you're hunting a small piece of property. Mm-hmm. There's nothing magical about public land.
But, I mean, he says here that somehow an animal pursued and taken on private lands is less
than... See? There it is.
Because of, he says, the product exclusivity.
Yes.
And I just...
Look, that deer does not live his whole life on my piece of property.
Right.
He roams all over the place.
Right.
And if you know, he's not my deer.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not your deer. He's whoever's out there when he walks by. That's who gets the deer.
Right. So I've had that argument with Uncle Paul before.
Yes. Okay. Continue on.
He goes on to say in his final conclusion is that the hunters we see as our friends are close buddies or family, but they're not the hunters that are just walking around in the woods making everybody's life miserable. It's not. You have so many different people from so many walks of life that may not be the stupid ones we think are trying to come in and take our land. His perspective on this is that these kind of hunters, like I said, are neighbors and coworkers that want to learn how we do it, why we do it, and how they can get involved, and they're willing to put the work in. And he said it's our responsibility as experienced hunters to welcome the newcomers. And if you don't, I mean, you're not helping the future generation of hunters.
You're going to have to pick who you want to cover next.
I'll go.
I'll give you a second to go ahead and figure out who you want to do, who you think is better.
I don't know.
There's like five of them.
There's four of them.
Four of them, okay.
I don't know. Okay, we'll do Alex Robinson.
Okay, all right.
The traditional hunting community has a decision to make. Welcome new folks into our places and teach them our customs, or close access and let hunting tradition die. And he says, we need a diverse coalition of folks joining conservation organizations, bringing new perspectives to the conversation, and being there for each other with legislators and administrators who are over our hunting rights. Hunting culture must grow to survive. America is just becoming more different, and there are so many diverse people out there. And the more we look at it, the more we need people, the people we have in our community now, we need more of them. We can argue about the overall effectiveness of the R3 movement, but you can't argue against the fact that R3 is an effort that is attempting to open up, like, hunting to the folks that haven't been able to get involved, like women and people of color, people that
did not have the traditional hunting background.
Right, and people that may think they're not welcome, or people that don't have any access. They're making it available for them.
And if you read Matt and Renella's article, as a newcomer, you might think you're not welcome.
Mm-hmm. But there are so many organizations out there that work with these people. And if you ask an R3 coordinator, what are the limits to who can work with us? It's no limits. There are so many people out there, but not enough people to help them. And the volunteers that are doing National Deer Association, Field to Fork, or Pheasants Forever, they're doing it with little to no pay, just strictly for their love of this sport and getting people out there. Hunter recruitment has evolved. Instead of attempting to conceive random people or to convince that random people that they should come try hunting, they're reaching out to people that have always wanted to hunt but never had a way to. Other hunters aren't competition, but they're kindred spirits. This is one of the quotes in here that I really, really like. It's a job for the veteran hunters to welcome and teach the new people that are eager to learn and put the work in. And I think work is a big part of it, because we put our work in not only during the season, but when we plant and we make sure that everything is there for the new season.
And there's something to be said, too. We feel like we've somehow earned this right to hunt, and that it's ours, and it's, you know, it's somehow ours, but it's everyone's. Everyone that wants to hunt ought to be. And a lot of it's based on how you approach a new hunter. I mean, if you run into a new hunter in the woods, how do you react to them? You know, another hunter, you don't know if they're just starting, if they're a veteran like you. I don't think there's a secret spot on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
Your fishing spot is somebody else's fishing spot.
Right.
Your hunting spot is probably somebody else's hunting spot, even in a club situation.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get through much more of that. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I have final thought of his, and then I'll stop. Other hunters, again, are not competition. True hunters, whether they're veterans or newbies, they can comprehend the principles of conservation. They can understand nature and firearm safety. They're not just, he says, sterilized national park tour type of nature. This is the real flesh and blood, circle of life kind of nature. And he said, like I said, when you look at the state of this country and the society we're living in, it could be useful to have more people that we have in the hunting community out there.
Sure. Look, introduce anyone to hunting, and the reasons behind hunting and the conservation behind hunting, even if they don't keep hunting, they understand who cares about the game.
Right.
They become caretakers of the natural resources, the lands, the animals that run around on it, and all that.
And if you think of it, go read the rest of this, because like I said, there are four in there, and they are all so good. It's outdoorlife.com, and you can, it's, the headline is Meat Eater Misses the Point in its Case Against Hunter Recruitment Story.
Yep.
So,
and Matt's article again is, let's see. Well, I had it. The Case Against Hunter Recruitment. We're not going to get to Steve's remarks, but his Meat Eater founder, Stephen Rennell, addresses R3 op-ed, and that's on the Meat Eater website too. So
go read it, please. It's if you don't get anything from anything else from it, if you don't have an opinion, at least you'll get some facts about.
That's right, and it'll make you think. You think. It's good to have a good conversation, because you've got to know what you believe and why you believe it to be able to defend it or advocate for it.
Right.
So good job. Well, we'll end this show, which passed really quick. on Tuesday, Bass announced that the 22 Bassmaster Classic will be held at Lake Hartwell.
Woohoo!
So March 4th through 6th, the fishing will be done at Lake Hartwell. The expo and weigh-ins will be at Greenville. And this is the fourth time, 2008, 2015, 2018, and 22, we will have hosted the Bassmaster Classic. So,
yeah.
All right. With that, thank you for tuning in. As always, make time to get out there.
Take the back road when you can.
Don't forget that camera. By the way, did you see the eagle picture I took the other
day
with the mouth open? Cool. All right. Y'all have a good one. We'll be back next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina.